Hey everybody, welcome back to But Why Though the Podcast, and today we're talking about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. As always, I'm Kate, I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And Adrian is going to be leading us through this episode today.
I am. Yeah, so we are talking about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We just celebrated its 30th anniversary in 2020, which is crazy. 1990 was 30 years ago. Time.
It's almost Kate years old, or I'm almost Fresh Prince years old.
I like that Jurassic Park theme with the little meme where they have like the kid hiding from the raptor, and it's like the 90s kids, yeah. And it has the raptor 30.
Scary times. I couldn't really think of an intro song or like intro song, an intro question, because like, I don't know, who grew up in the 90s and early 2000s and doesn't like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or like know the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? So my question, do you know all the words to the theme song?
Oh, I'm no. Currently playing the music in my head.
Yeah. Matt?
Yes, At one time I did, but it actually has been a long time since I've heard it. And so it's one of those, I need the running start to get it going.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if you heard it, it probably just come all back to you.
I'm one of those, I need the running start.
I know
start.
It all.
Yeah. I think the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's theme song has like a perfect thing where it just gives you the premise of the show and just like throws you into it, and it's catchy and it's a bop. So we're just gonna run into it. 30 years of history. Gonna start with a production history as per usual. So the theme song and the opening sequence basically set the premise for the show. Will Smith, I'm not gonna sing the whole song as much as I would love to, but
now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute and just sit right there and tell you how I became the prince of the town called Bel-Air.
Yeah, see, so there you go. That's been.
And now we're gonna get sued for copyright.
Yeah. Basically, Will Smith is a street smart teenager, West Philadelphia, born and raised.
On the playgrounds where he spent the most of the days.
While playing street ball, Will misses a shot and the ball hits a group of gang members, causing a confrontation that frightens his mother.
Would you say that they were a couple of guys who were up to no good?
Yeah, and they started some trouble in his neighborhood. Basically, and then his mom sends him to live with his wealthy aunt, who is her sister and the uncle in Bel-Air, Los Angeles. Will's basically working class background ends up clashing with various humorous ways with the upper class world of the Banks family. Will's uncle Phil and Aunt Vivian and their children, Will's cousins, spoiled Hillary, entitled Carlton, and impressionable Ashley are the family. The show itself is based on Benny Medina, a producer who has worked with big names such as Ray Charles, Prince, Naughty by Nature, Madonna, Fleetwood Mac, and a whole bunch of other ones. Medina actually grew up in East LA, and his life changed when he befriended a rich white teenager whose family lived in Beverly Hills, and they let Medina live with them. So basically, same kind of story, but switch out the family for a white family. Also, the choice to make...
I was going to say... Like, wait, I don't know if it's down there, but like, that's two Afro-Latino connections, because Betty Medina is Dominican and the sister is Latina as well.
Yeah. And I mean, and Alfonso Ribeiro is Trinidadian.
Trinidadian. That's dope. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there. The choice to make the family black in The Fresh Prince stemmed from a black character living with a white rich family had already been done. So Medina was quoted as saying,
"When was that?"
I don't know. I've never seen that personally, but that's what the interview said that he did, where he said...
it was like that, the blind side? Was this the blind side?
Yeah. This was the blind side.
Before the blind
side. Or maybe it's just like the kind of white, you know, pick up the poor kid from
the trenches
kind of thing.
That's fair.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, what did like you Google to try thing. To find this?
How...
The blind side.
How Fresh Prince was created. But yeah, basically like the blind side, right? Like when you pick up a poor kid and you give him a better life because you were affluent and white. Like I'd argue that's pretty tropey.
That's pretty standard. Yeah, it's like the whole like white savior thing.
Yeah, white savior. That was the word I was looking
teachers
for. White
all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Medina said that way we could explore black on black prejudice as well as black class differences, which if you know the show is a big part of it. Medina said in an interview for Ebony Magazine is where he said that. Medina pitched the idea to the great music producer Quincy Jones, who had just signed a TV deal with Time Warner. Jones liked the idea and set up a meeting with NBC. In 1989, Will Smith, who had just won a Grammy for Parents Just Don't Understand earlier that year, basically came into the picture essentially by chance. Smith met with Medina at the taping of the Arsenio Hall show, where Medina pitched the show to him. Smith, obviously being a rapper, wasn't really keen on being an actor. However, Medina invited Smith to Quincy Jones's house for his birthday, and Jones basically had Smith audition for the main role, like, on the spot in front of, like, NBC producers, and basically just said, like, hey, here you go, audition for this role. Jones basically had Smith do that, and it worked out. Smith landed the job, and then they basically drew up the contracts that night, and, like, 6 weeks later, they're filming the pilot, essentially.
I also think that it's really cool that two music producers are the people who brought Fresh Prince to, like, birth.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Especially, you know, two big music producers like Medina and Quincy Jones. Like, you think of two powerhouse producers who've worked with basically everybody in the business. Like, who has Quincy Jones not worked with? And how how quick it happened. Like, they show up, gets the role. 6 weeks later, they're filming the pilot. So the pilot episode began taping in May of 1990. Season one first aired in September of 1990 and ended in 1991. The series finale was taped on March 21st, 1966, and aired on May 20th,
1996.
96, sorry.
Okay, 96. Did I say 86?
Both of you are just completely going backwards the wrong way.
The series finale was taped on March of 1996 and was aired on May 1996. So one of the big things when you look at the timeline, they basically like filmed and wrote all of the show seasons in like a few weeks and then just pumped them out, which is pretty crazy considering 148 episodes over six seasons is quite a bit of episodes, and to pump them out that quick is pretty crazy. So
and they did it live, right?
I will say...
Yeah, they did do it live.
I will say, obviously, we've done a few TV shows, and all we realize is show from the 90s and before, they knew what they were doing, and they put in some hours or work and just pumped stuff out. Like, people talking about, like, all the production money and all this time, and I'm like, you made 13 episodes, and it took you 3 years.
Yeah, so basically, like, they would do table reads on Tuesday, film on Thursday, and like that, or film on Friday, and that, like, be a wrap, and they would, like, just do an episode. And this is also kids back in the day when they would, like, do it in front of a live studio audience. Remember when they were like, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was filmed in front of a live studio audience.
And they had a little clap sign.
Yeah. This wasn't like Matt, you know, I love the Big Bang Theory, but this isn't like the Big Bang Theory, like where they just kind of like throw in a laugh track. Like had people laughing.
It was genuine laughter.
Yeah. They actually had to pause and wait for the laughter to die down. So the cat, and I also love Big Bang Theory. Like, we need to do an episode at some point because I do like that show.
I've been trying to get around to it. The only thing that sucks is the longer we wait, I feel like the more people think it's becoming like the one show. Like, people, it was really popular and people tried to act like it wasn't cool anymore. People act like it wasn't cool anymore. I'm like, really? I think that show set so many records and held the number one, like, highest rating on TV for like 10 years. Shut up.
So the cast consists of Will Smith as Will Smith, James Avery as Philip Banks. First thing first, rest in peace, Uncle Phil. For real? No, not J. Cole fans?
I'm sad now.
Janet Hubert as Vivian Banks, number one. Danny Maxwell Reed as Vivian Banks, number two. Wait, Daphne? What? Yeah, sorry. Daphne. Did I say Daphne?
No. You said Danny.
You said Danny Effany Reed or something like that.
Daphne Maxwell Reed as Vivian Banks, number two. More this later on why we have two Vivian Bankses. Alfonso Ribeiro as Carlton Banks, my hero. Just kidding.
He's your twin. He's your older twin.
Yeah.
So I know that you don't like being compared to Carlton or Alfonso Ribeiro, but you both just have like joyful smiles that like it's very hard to replicate. Like you all just have like those joyful faces.
That's all right. I wore sweater vests like all through high school, so it's fine. I'm used to it. I'm used to it now.
That's why I didn't
mind. I would like to thank Dancing with the Stars for getting me to call him Alfonso Ribeiro, because I just called him Carlton for the longest time.
That's fair. Karen Parsons as Hillary Banks, Tatiana Ali as Ashley Banks, Joseph Marks as Jeffrey Butler. That was actually his last name. I don't know if you all knew that. But
no.
His last name was actually Butler from the Butler family.
That's totally got to be a Joffrey. That can't be a Jeffrey. He's a Butler.
It's Jeffrey.
It's a Joffrey.
It's Jeffrey.
Any Butler is always called Jeffrey.
It's Jeffrey, Matt.
Joffrey.
It's, or no. As Will would call him, G. Yeah. Ross Bagley as Nikki Banks, which like is a very like small role, obviously, like later on in the seasons. And of course, DJ Jazzy Jeff as Jazz. One of the things I love most about this show is that they had so many guest appearances. Obviously, like not The Simpsons is obviously going to have more, but 57 guest appearances between like Don Cheadle, Bo Jackson, Queen Latifah, Isaiah Thompson, Evander Leigh Holyfield, Oprah.
Evander Holyfield. Oh my God, Adrian.
Does he have one or two ears at this time?
No.
2 years. 2 years. Yeah, this is 2 years. Because he shows up in season one, so I'm pretty sure this is two years. Evander Holyfield. Oprah, Tom Jones, Hugh Hefner, because Hillary has that thing where she does the Playboy thing. Boyz II Men, Kareem, Abdul-Jabbar, Ken Griffey Jr., Jay Leno, B.B. King, Chris Rock, William Shatner, Gary Coleman, 45 is in it, and Quincy Jones himself actually shows up with a whole bunch of other people who usually just play themselves because since they're in Beverly Hills, they live in an area apparently where every famous celebrity lives. I guess every famous celebrity is like their neighbor, so they get a lot of celebrity guests.
Fun fact, I listen to a lot of blues because of the B.B. King episode, and my mom was like, do you know who he is? Here's some of his music. And so when I was like a little youngin', me and my mom listened to B.B. King and other blues things.
So I do got a question here, because obviously we did Seinfeld, and then we're doing this one now. Do they even do celebrity guests anymore on TV shows?
I don't think so.
I know you brought up The Simpsons, but Seinfeld also had a ton. And then I think we've done a few other shows that we probably can look at, especially if we do any.
If I think of sitcoms, like Modern Family doesn't really have any.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like all the new ones that I can think of, and obviously I don't watch that many, they just don't have any celebrity thing. Yeah. Versus this, I can, you know, there's more in here than we probably had all.
There also aren't that many sitcoms anymore, too.
Well, that's also true.
Yeah, and I also know that, like, Quincy Jones is attached to this show, so that just in and of itself...
His entire Rolodex gets...
Yeah, like, he's like, hey, man. Yeah. Hey, Evander, you want to come on the show? And I'm pretty sure that helps a lot. I mean, you don't get these kind of people on your show without kind of some kind of pool. And if you, like, look at the list, like, the entire list, it's a lot of, like, black actors, which is...
Yeah.
Makes sense with the show.
Ken Griffey and some Jr., of its dynamics. Evander Holyfield, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bo Jackson. It's got everybody. Those aren't actors.
Oh, yeah, those aren't actors, yeah.
I give celebrities, I guess. I mean, a lot of actors, but I put a lot of the sports people because you're here.
Oh, thanks.
There was a bunch of actors, actually. I had to put Hugh Hefner in there, and, you know, come on, man. Quincy Jones plays himself. Don Cheadle, the Don Cheadle stuff is really great. It's really interesting to see him as like a kid messing around with Will Smith after we've seen him in so much other stuff over the years. So it's nice little, when you go back and watch the show, it's nice little nuggets of like, oh, hey, I know who that is kind of things.
Yeah.
So that's really the production history, very fast paced thing that happened and just turned into what we know now as the Fresh Prince.
Are you still looking for those last minute holiday gifts? Are you shopping for some pop culture fans or, you know, just looking to treat yourself? Well, we got you covered.
Head over to fun.com to grab anime-themed ugly sweaters, a Wampa rug, pop culture blazers, and a bunch of whole other exclusives. Fun.com has the best selection of gifts that can be anything from clothing, both fun and professional variety, to toys from brands like Star Wars, Disney, Harry Potter, Marvel, DC, and more.
Yeah, that all sounds amazing. And guess what? You all can use our link that's in the show notes to get 15% off right now at fun.com and finish your holiday shopping today.
Get right.
Yo, in. I'm ready to get into the meat of this.
Yeah, let's do it. So for the But Why Those, it does have a successful live run and also a successful syndication run. So the show basically goes from 1990 to 1996, and it racks up 6 seasons spanning 148 episodes, all of which are on NBC. Which is crazy to me. Someone asked me how many episodes. I was like, oh, 148. And they're like, wait, 148? And I was like, yeah, there's like 20-something episodes in the first
season. That's what I'm saying. It's amazing. Like, and that's why I brought that up earlier, just like how many episodes these older shows pumped out. Because I'm like, man, 6 seasons? That's like nothing. But then I'm like, wait a minute, 148 episodes? There's shows on here today that have like 10 seasons and don't even get to 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and again, it kind of runs on a Monday night spot, which anyone will tell you who is a person, like, you're always competing against, like, Monday night football numbers, at least in the 90s, I guess, I don't even know if that's so much a thing anymore, but basically runs in that spot against Monday night football for a long time, and then in the later half of the 90s, you have to compete against Monday Night Football and Monday Night Wars with wrestling. So they're just kind of like in a real bad spot.
It's funny hearing that because I remember watching this show always like on afternoons after school.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not like Monday nights.
Yeah. And that's the syndication stuff that we'll talk about here in a second. But when it was live, the ratings, or I guess now the ratings, 7.9 on IMDb, 8.8 on TV.com, 96% Google audience score, 82% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a really weird 59 on Metacritic.
It's terrible.
It's like 13 reviews from 2013. And I don't want to say that it's a certain kind of reviewer, but I feel like it's a certain kind of reviewer. Because if you look at like all the other ones, it has like, you know, hundreds of reviews. And these 13 people, for some reason, kind of tank that review.
So to be not to be fair, but to be realistic of Metacritic. Metacritic, we've talked about this before, anybody that's listened to us. Metacritic is based, especially in their TV and film section, on about 100 different outlets, in which these are outlets that are like from the 90s. Basically, if you ran a newspaper, if you don't even know what a newspaper is, like a radio station, like I think the St. Louis Dispatch is on there.
It's like the old guard of media. Yeah, which so the old guard of media looks a certain way.
Yeah, and so Metacritic refuses. They've been updating some of their site, but when it comes to TV and film, Metacritic will not update that side. And so, like, the San Francisco Chronicle's on there. I'm like, you're a newspaper. Why? I mean, not saying you don't do stuff, but like, why am I supposed to care what you have to say about Fresh Prince of Bel Air? But yeah, that's what sucks about Metacritic, because Rotten Tomatoes has its own issues, which we've probably mentioned plenty of times. But Metacritic, when it comes to TV and film, it's just always like, I'm not surprised when I hear it.
Thank you, Chad. Glad to know you gave this a 20.
Yeah, it's stuff like that, too. Like a 20, like, come on, man. A 20.
And that doesn't include the fact that these are
unrealistic.
And that doesn't even include the fact that these are from 2013, which puts them almost 20 years. And we've seen what changes in like the last 5 years, let alone the last 10, 15, 20 plus years.
Yeah, I think like one of like the audience or like one of like the public reviews on Metacritic was like, no, the show's great. I don't know what these people are talking about, like digging out. Like, because he used his review just to dig on the actual certified reviewers, which is crazy. But I know we talked about it before the show, but I think Rotten Tomatoes is pretty spot on. I think 82% is a decent score, considering sitcoms and considering 90s sitcoms. Like, there's powerhouse sitcoms that we've covered here before during that same time, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, because interestingly enough, when we talk about awards, The Fresh Prince has no Emmys. It has one nomination over the course of its run, but it's also competing against powerhouse shows from the 80s and early 90s, like The Golden Girls, Murphy Brown, Cheers, Seinfeld, Home Improvement, Frasier, and Friends towards the end of its run, which, if I'm being honest, kind of all have one thing in common between all of those things. Those are all not...
not diverse.
Not diverse sitcoms. Because
I am interested to see if we do talk about 90s, because obviously we do have, we mentioned in the Seinfeld episode how much it took down, but I would to see how much it would compare and what the awards are for what we get in the other shows with Family Matters that also comes out in the, I believe in the 90s, is that correct?
Yeah, so early 90s is also looks very different than mid-90s to early 2000s.
That's what I'm saying. That's why
there are a lot of...
Well, when I was looking at like the Emmy nominations for that year, like these were the shows that were nominated: Family Matters, Family Matters. You know, even like the Cosby Show, because the Cosby Show is still going on at this time. None of those shows are nominated. Like these are the shows that are being nominated at that time. All white sitcoms. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but if I'm being honest, like Family Matters is better than most of like these shows that are being nominated in my opinion.
Seinfeld probably the only one that I like over. Probably.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree there.
And I think, too, like, it's already been shown and they've done the data, at least on, like, the film side of, like, their, like, they introduced the barest of bare diversity standards for films for the Oscars. And it was a whole bunch of the old film guard just like, but I would never watch that. And it's like, okay, but why? Because is it because there are five black and brown people in here? Is this why?
Yeah.
So, like, it is very easy to show that when your critic body looks a certain way, which at that point it was, it tends to skew a certain way.
And you
way
got
too.
You got Murphy Brown, which represented all women for, like, a decade.
Yes, exactly. And the Golden Girls. There was no difference.
Yeah. So I just chalk that up to being those people just being Metacritic people is what I'm going to chalk that up to. With that being said, it does have awards and a bunch of other ones that are kind of like really not super major, to be honest. A lot of them come from Ashley Banks and Carlton Banks getting awards because of like their acting. I think one of the ones that's most interesting is the TP de Oro award, which basically they won best foreign series in Mexico, which
that's cool.
Which we've covered before. Like Mexico watches the hell out of like TV. They have, yeah. What is it? I don't know if they still have it, but I remember like a stat when I was younger, like they have like the most TVs per capita of like most major
it's
countries.
It's weird because they don't do movies.
Yeah. They just have so much TV. We consume a lot of media, y'all. And apparently they really love the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So moving on from there, obviously, I was born in 1993. I don't remember watching this on NBC. I watched most of this in syndication, or all of this in syndication. So again, thinking about syndication, Monday nights in the 90s, again, not the best place to be. When you're on NBC, you're competing against Monday Night Football and Monday Night Wars in the late 90s. However, at the end of the fourth season, NBC wanted... So it was doing well, right? Like, it does well up into the fourth season, pulls decent numbers, but... NBC wanted to pull the plug after that fourth season, after an average mediocre 8.6 rating, but the reruns were drawing a 7.4. So the network figured that there was more money to be made in the syndicated runs of the show rather than spending money to produce new episodes. However, the managers of the local NBA affiliates pleaded to save The Fresh Prince. Apparently, they thought the show could become one of those super successful shows where people religiously watched their favorite episodes. To avoid oversaturating viewers with the episodes they already had, about 100 at that time, the station managers agreed to buy the fifth and sixth seasons at a greatly inflated price, adding 50 more shows to the respective libraries and helping avoid burning out the audience. NBC basically went on and produced that fifth and sixth season of the TV show. So, you know, local NBA affiliates saved the show. And we get that fifth and sixth season, but it also jumpstarts the syndication of them allowing to kind of rerun those episodes in a way that was easy to consume.
Yeah.
Oh, because anything too. Oh, go ahead.
I was like, because I'm like you, like I don't even get to this country until about like 91 at this point, and so like I don't remember watching any of this until pretty much it comes into syndication and like after school versus like prime. Anything. I think it's 91 when I get here. I don't remember. 91 or 92 when I come to this country. But it's, yeah, that's, I don't remember ever watching this at night. And I didn't, honestly, probably before you said this, I didn't even know it was on primetime TV. I mean, I probably could have assumed, but it was just not at the time.
Yeah. And that's the same. Yeah, go for it.
No, I'm the same as both of you. Like, I watched it not as it was coming out, but I watched it every night and I watched it when I got back from school.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where, and I'll talk about this here in a second, but the show currently airs on MTV2, didn't know that was still a channel, BET and VH1, while previously airing reruns on WGN America, TBS, Nick at Night, Teen Nick, Disney XD, ABC Family, Centric, MTV, and CMT. I did not
know. What the hell is CMT?
I did not know that they showed this on CMT.
Not CMT. I want to know what is Centric MTV?
Centric is like its own thing. I don't know what Centric is.
Oh, Centric is a separate TV channel.
You know what? Centric MTV could have been its own channel because I don't even know what the MTV is anymore.
But CMT really blows me away. I need to like
CMT. I'm very, very interested in going.
Yeah.
I watched it on TBS and Nick at Night.
I watched same TBS, Nick at Night, and WG America.
Yeah, same here.
And I think I want to say some ABC Family, but I won't put too far. But yeah, definitely not CMT.
On ABC Family.
I watched Family Matters on ABC Family.
See, that's probably the more one I watched than ABC Family.
Yeah, same here. So the series did develop significant popularity in the UK, where it aired on BBC Two between 1991 and 1996. So basically as Matt's transitioning.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it. They brought it to my country, and then I left, and I didn't get to get it.
With the reruns airing on television networks between 1996 and 2004, which was shown alongside The Simpsons and was later repeated on Bravo, Trouble, Channel One, Living, Sky Living Ones, Viva, MTV, Nickelodeon, and currently Comedy Central. So I guess it's still on a bunch of channels in the UK, which I think is super cool. But currently the series is streaming on HBO and along with the 30th reunion, which is really great.
I do want to give a shout out to Bravo, which was the best 3 a.m. programming ever with the celebrity poker.
Oh my god.
I love
this. Is true.
Bravo is celebrity true. Poker at like 3 a.m.
So from there is actually no musical, unfortunately, But the show does have plenty of music.
The whole show is a musical, isn't it?
That's what I was going to say. But the thing has so many musical scenes because everyone on that show is, like, super talented and a performer. Like Hubert's, like, went to Juilliard. You know, Uncle Phil's classically trained. Tatiana
ends he's a Shakespearean actor, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then Ashley, like, goes on to be, like, an actual singer. Like, there's lots of talent there. So maybe not, you know, musicals, but there are lots of musical numbers. There is a planned reboot in the works in 2019, a mock trailer titled Bear Lair was uploaded on YouTube, written and directed by Morgan Cooper, for a darker, more dramatic reimagining of the sitcom. Will Smith subsequently heavily praised the fan film, commenting that Morgan did a ridiculous trailer for Bel Air, brilliant idea, the dramatic version of The Fresh Prince for the next generation, expressing interest in expanding the idea beyond the short film into a full Bel Air reboot series. In August 2020, it was announced that Will Smith and Morgan Cooper could be developing a reboot series on Cooper's Bel Air. The series reportedly had been in the works for over a year since Cooper posted his Bel Air trailer on YouTube. And on September 8th, Peacock gave Bel Air a 2-season order. I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but it's pretty good.
I would actually be down to watch it with, like, Will Smith being Uncle Phil.
That would be really good.
I think that would be really cool. It feels like a natural progression.
I just don't want... I'm tired of natural progression like this. Just give me... I just don't need it to be Bel Air. Just give me something that's basically... If you want to do something like this, I'm not opposed. But just, I just don't understand why we have to reboot to back up, I guess.
And I'm like that with a lot of things, but I don't know why it does. I can't tell you why it doesn't bother me. Like, I would actually be like... I guess because I'm just like, it's the wholesome content that I need right now of just like Will Smith going into, you know, his old, you know, a role that like he was, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, watch it. It's like a 3-minute trailer. I think it's worth the watch. I remember this one first came out in 2019. I was about it. Like it's.
I will say it's better to watch than whatever the hell they're trying to do with the Powerpuff Girls. I will give it better than that.
Yeah, so the thing for the show itself, that it's not kind of like... Powerpuff is a great example, right? It's Powerpuff Girls, but just like a different animation style. Ben 10, but just a different animation style. Like, this is more of like a... I'd probably say more of like a reimagining where, you know, probably less jokes, more serious stuff on some of the issues that they actually do go through. So, you know, Peacock's free, so you don't got to pay nothing to watch this show, which I'm excited about because I'm tired of another subscription service.
Yeah.
Kind of to wrap up our syndication talk here, I think for me personally... when I'm thinking about the sitcoms that I used to watch when I was a kid, Nick at Nite is where I watched probably a lot of my sitcoms when I was growing up. And given that there wasn't any Brown TV shows, like this was like the closest thing I got to seeing not watching Frasier or Will and Grace or XYZ Home Improvement or like we talked about, like a lot of white sitcoms, and there wasn't a lot of like people of color, let alone someone like Carlton, who I kind of like socially identified with in a show. So The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air started on Nick at Nite in 2004. Basically like the only, the big show that I watched that had non-white cast until I get the George Lopez show, like forever from now. Family Matters isn't on Nick at Nite until 2008. I was never a big Cosby Show fan, even though it was on there in 2002. Different Strokes was like only on there for like a year, and The Jeffersons was on there since 99, but I honestly like didn't really like The Jeffersons.
I can't do it. I've tried watching The Jeffersons. It's too old. Yeah, I can't do it.
I can't do it. And, you know, like Latinx sitcoms don't really exist in the late 90s and don't even really exist now.
So they don't exist now. Well, there's literally, so there's one. There is one, and it's been canceled twice.
So I guess for me, obviously, I did like The Cosby Show. Obviously, it's a little weird watching it now. but I did watch The Cosby Show, but I was also like another one of those that came on at, I think it was 5:30 a.m. and 6 a.m. So when you pull the all-nighter, you could watch it. I do remember watching that one. I was never the biggest fan of George Lopez Show. I did watch, what the heck is his name? I don't know if it's Marlon Wayans.
The Wayans Brothers?
The Wayans Brothers.
He has a family sitcom show that I really enjoyed his show.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I don't remember what year that one is.
I know it's after 90s.
This. Is it mid-90s? Because I remember I used to watch that one all the time.
And that was going to be my point here, too. And obviously, like, I don't want to, like, speak too much about, like, what it's like in the black experience, like, watching all these sitcom shows. Because basically, like, after The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and I don't want to say after The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but, like, basically, like, after, like, Family Matters, Cosby Show, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, we get a whole bunch of other, like, black sitcoms. Like, Jamie Foxx gets a show. The Wayans Brothers get a show. we have a whole bunch of like black sitcoms, but no brown ones.
And then 9/11 happens, and then we have nothing.
Yeah, basically. And that's why like I gravitated so much to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because they cover a lot of the things that I could identify with, while, you know, they were relatively similar to me in ways that like Home Improvement wasn't, as much as I liked watching Home Improvement. I guess not anymore, yeah. Right? Because you can't like Home Improvement.
Did you actually ever like Home Improvement? I did never.
I did. It always made me wanted to have a house like with a neighbor where I could like just poke my head over the fence, which I have now, actually. So whenever he's outside and I'm outside, I'm like, hey, man.
I felt like I was forced to like Home Improvement. I just could never, like, I didn't like hate it, but I didn't really like, I was like, I don't understand why people love this show.
I mean, I didn't love it, but, you know, if it was on, I'd watch it.
No, it was a hard one for me. Home Improvement was a hard one, and I didn't care about Frasier.
Okay, so next we're going
to
get
I didn't get to talk about my show.
Go for it. Sorry, Kate.
Go for it. Good, that's what you get. That ain't how we feel for 160 episodes.
No, yeah, go for it. No, similar to what Adrian said, like, there was nobody like me on TV anywhere. So the only one that was a sitcom was Taina. And so Taina was the only time I saw like a Latina on TV who looked like me. Like, she was a brown woman, her family was brown, they looked like me, and I could see myself in that. I didn't know like the Latino history involved with Fresh Prince until way later. But like, for me, like, I really gravitated towards the Fresh Prince, towards Family Matters. My mom and I used to watch A Different World a lot, yeah. Which I think is before mm-hmm. that. My mom was at Living Single. My mom watched a hell of a lot of. And then, of course, like, Moesha. Like, all of those shows, like, all of the big shows that came out, like, I really leaned on them because, like, the experience wasn't one for one, like you said. But it was way closer than watching, mm-hmm. like, the middle-class white family. Yeah. Like, it was just way closer because a lot of the stuff that happened on there, like, I could also identify with because it was just a different experience. And I think one of the things that I really like, when you kind of, like, step back and you look at, again, like, not speaking for the black experience, but it's very interesting to look at, like, at, I guess, Matt, pre-2001 when 9/11 kind of made all diversity go away, which I think we talked about in our Die Hard episode. You had shows that just focused on families and middle-class black families and the difference in class, and like A Different World was just kids at an HBCU and like just living their lives, and it dealt with the issue so naturally. Versus I feel like now, and I feel like we're starting to get away from it, but a lot of the time, like, if you do get a Latinx show, if you do get a black show, it's like, okay, how much pain can we put them through in the inner city, and that's the show that you're gonna get. Whereas like in the 90s it was like, no, this is just a family being a family, going through family stuff, going through some of the shitty stuff that, yeah, they would go through because of their identity. But also, it isn't just that. And that's, like, one of the, like, the really, really cool things. But yeah, I think for me, Nick at Night was George Lopez, or TBS. It was always TBS and Nick at Night for George Lopez and Fresh Prince. And then Family Matters was ABC Family with Full House. Full House was the only white show that I really, really liked when I was younger.
I didn't like that until I was older. That was weird. So I did kind of Google while you were talking about some shows. I did watch a lot of the Steve Harvey Show.
Really
love the Steve Harvey Show.
I love that one.
Some of these, like Hanging Mr. Cooper, I never got into that one.
That's the one with Sinbad. I watched that one.
I watched some of it, but that was not one that I loved. Married with Children was not one I could ever really get into.
My
either.
Dad really liked Married
Apparently
with Children.
Apparently people love that
I
one.
Never...
I never understood that one.
I watched it on FX and I thought it was funny, but it's like, it's real dark.
It has its moments, but it is very dark.
I don't even consider that a sitcom. Like, that's just dark.
Obviously, just looking at some other ones just to see thing. Obviously, Growing Pains. So obviously, that's like ends in like the early 90s.
I watched that because Leonardo DiCaprio.
I can't take serious because it has a crazy guy in there now that made me hate that show. What was the son that's
Kirk
in there?
Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, there we go. That guy is out there. I mean, obviously you have like Boy Meets World, depending on the age limits you go.
Okay, I did watch Boy Meets World.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about like you have some of the age ones. Obviously, Step by Step was apparently another one that was all throughout the whole 90s.
Yeah. And I think the big thing here is that, I mean, I don't even know, like, maybe Nick at Night deserves an episode, but like that was like where syndication thing went to go live, yeah, and why I think those things, those shows are so popular. Because all those shows you just mentioned, I didn't watch any of those on primetime TV.
I didn't either.
All of those on Nick at Night, or you know, things like ABC Family and things like that.
Yeah, I think you're right, Adrian. That and like the good day, the good old days of UPN at like from 1 o'clock to 3 p.m.
Yeah, exactly. that's why when I was like looking up these things for what showed on Nick at Night, I didn't even realize the George Lopez show was a primetime TV show. I thought that was just like a Nick. I thought that was just a Nick at Night show.
So that one I did watch on primetime.
That one I did watch on primetime.
I attempted that one on primetime,
mainly
and then
because
it became a syndication
like
for
my
me.
Family was like, we're gonna support our people and we're all gonna tune in and watch this.
What a sad time. That's a perfect transition for some of the controversies that I'm going to sandwich in here with the other stuff, because we got to talk about it at some point. But Will Smith actually had a bunch of tax troubles going into the filming of The Fresh Prince. Like many young people who suddenly become rich and famous overnight, Smith was terrible with his money. He reportedly owed the IRS $2.8 million in unpaid taxes by 1990. And he basically agrees to do The Fresh Prince as a way to kind of get out of debt, essentially. It was so bad that Will Smith had to surrender 70% of his pay from the show for the first three seasons to the IRS.
Oh, crap.
I will say so I've become like this weird back and forth with this, because one, I still think we've gotten past the age of like, you know, like especially because I obviously look at more athletes and obviously not so much actor stuff, but like you see broke, like I think it's almost like 30% of athletes end up going broke or something after the while.
Yeah.
So obviously we have a problem with educating just people in general with like, I mean, obviously see with child actors or stuff, but just money. Young people with money. What?
No, just like young people.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Child with money. But then I learned, and then when you grow up and you learn that the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, but you have no idea how to do your taxes, and you learn this country hates you. Doing your taxes is ridiculous, and I understand, and I feel for all the people who end up going for jail for taxes, except like Messi, who, when you're doing it in Spain, you know what you're doing. But like Wesley Snipes ends up going to jail, obviously Will Smith ends up having problems, and you can probably just pull up a list of how many people get hit by the IRS. And over time, I feel so bad of, like, how bad our tax system is.
Yeah, like, part of me is, like, I feel like some of these people just wanted to keep their money and be rich. And the other part of me is, like, nobody told this young kid how they're supposed to file taxes.
That's what I'm saying.
On
that's
this
what I was
giant
like,
amount of money.
Like I said,
it's totally not their fault.
No, that's how I felt. Because I'm always like, how do people keep getting hit with taxes and you don't know what pay your money, what you think? And then, like, as you fill your tax, you're like, oh, my gosh, nobody knows how to do taxes. And it's only gotten
taxes
worse. Taxes
are made to just get people in a lie.
And then I look at other countries and how they do their taxes, and I'm like, never mind, America just hates us. No wonder we're all in debt.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, it's kind of crazy, like, considering, right? Like, Will Smith gets his start in music, like, I think when he's, like, 16, 17.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you know, by
he's
the time
a baby.
He's... By the time he's 21, he's winning a Grammy for, like, the first rap song to win like a Grammy. Like it's huge.
Yeah.
And then he has a bunch of debt, so much debt in fact that the IRS also reportedly took a chunk of the money that he got from the syndication, which that's a long-standing amount of debt that dude had. He's fine now, obviously, right? Because he's Will Smith. But he basically said that he had to largely live off the royalties from his music during the show, because the tax man took all of his money for the first like three seasons plus syndication, which is pretty crazy. I did not know that until I was doing the notes for this episode. I was like, oh wow, not something I would have figured. Well, I guess it makes sense, right? After everything like Matt, you and Matt said, but that's
I've learned if you're young and you were rich and famous, you probably have done something bad with your money, either on purpose or just basically the government made it so confusing you have no idea.
Two things: you accidentally misfiled your taxes and now the government's coming for you. Or you hired an accountant to do your taxes and they stole all your money and now the government's coming for you.
Yes.
Those are the two situations that happen with young rich kids.
Yes, it's bad.
But I mean, it's fine. I mean, by 1967 or like shortly after the show, he basically does Big Willie style, sells a bunch of records.
Why do you keep saying 1967 and
1996, because I think what it is because my version of time, like, that's so long ago, like it's almost, you know, it's over 1990s, 30 years ago, and I guess in my mind I don't picture that as a long time. That's a long ass time. So I guess like in my mind I'm like, oh, 60s, like that's a long time ago, but now that's like a really, really long time ago. I think that's where my mind keeps going. I don't want
that makes sense.
I don't want to be old is where I'm
getting. It's still 2002. You didn't know that? We haven't aged past that.
2012. It's fine, right? It's fine.
The 90s were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, the other day we were laying in bed and Matt said something. I was like, oh, yeah, that was 10 years ago. He's like, Kate, no, that's not. That's not it.
The YouTube album thing. And I said it came out and I said it was like 25 years ago. And she goes, no. And I said, oh, in 2004. And she was like, oh, you mean like 10 years ago? And I was like, no. Or no, I said said like 1994 or something like that. And she was like, oh, you mean like 16 years ago? I was like, oh, no, yeah, 1994 is 26 years ago.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at. So other controversy, probably like the biggest one surrounding the show, is the two Aunt Vivs. It's pretty standard for like sitcom shows, especially during this time, to kind of like switch out actresses and actors and things like that. And we kind of don't really care about it after, but this one actually had a pretty big blowout that kind of lasted for basically for 30 years, essentially. So between season three and four, between season three and four, the original Aunt Vivian was replaced, and basically the change was like murky for years. Like no one really knew like why they changed, but apparently there was like early reports that Hubert was being difficult with her contract negotiations. She had gotten pregnant during the third season, which was like reportedly a breach of her contract. And then other reports said that Smith thought that Hubert was trying to make the show all about her and Smith wanted her gone, so he pushed her out. So basically for like nearly three decades, Smith and Hubert didn't speak and more or less feuded in the media. Not quite like Rock and like Tyrese levels, but there's
we don't have any
like
crying Instagram videos.
No, not on this one, I don't think. But there's definitely animosity there. So for a couple of quotes, Smith told Atlanta radio station in 1993, the original controversy, I can't say straight up that Janet Hubert wanted the show to be the Aunt Viv of Bel Air show because I know she's going to dog me in the press. She has basically gone from $250,000 a year to nothing. She's mad now, but she has been mad all along. She once said, I've been in the business for 10 years, and then this snotty punk comes along and gets a show. No matter what to her, I'm just the Antichrist. And this just wasn't Smith either. Alfonso also had some things to say. He said, you know, legally I'm not allowed to talk about it, but hey, why not? Basically, at the end of the day, he bleeps himself, was crazy. She went nuts. Long story short, there were days where we were all on set and she would literally go off on people, and they got to the point by the time the second season came along, we were like, this is unacceptable. We felt like when we were doing The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that we were a family. She, at the point, ruined that, and she made it very difficult for us to work, and unfortunately she was then fired. They brought in Daphne, who we absolutely loved, and we moved on. Oh well. We learn a little bit more in the reunion special that Hubert agreed to when she agreed to come on the show and talk to Smith after basically 27 years. We learned that Hubert was in an abusive relationship during the time of her pregnancy, and that she basically stopped interacting with the cast on her own accord. And then she made it known that her career was essentially over after leaving the show because all of the things that Smith and the production said about her. She's quoted in the special as saying, but you took all that away from me with your words, Hubert said. Words can kill. I lost everything, reputation, everything. I understand that you were able to move forward, but you know those words, calling a black woman difficult in Hollywood is the kiss of death, and it's hard enough being a dark-skinned black woman in this business. She would eventually come back like onto the set with the entire cast to kind of have the nice reunion. Daphne Maxwell Reed hadn't even met her this whole time, and she had originally like been pegged to be Aunt Viv in the first place, so basically a big old controversy there with the...
And she points out in the reunion, too, that like she wasn't fired. They just said she couldn't work anywhere else, and the man she was with wasn't bringing in any money, and everything was relying on her, and she needed to work somewhere else. So she just didn't. They just parted. And so apparently she wasn't really fired, or at least that's what she said.
Yeah.
But it's all really sad when you think about it, because what I really like about the reunion special is there's this moment where she's talking with Will, and you can tell that like Will Smith is like kind of like connecting the dots. Like he's realizing all those times that he thought she was mean, like she was really just going through it and wasn't, you know, it wasn't personal. And it's like it's a really sad moment because you kind of realize, oh, well, these people should have just kind of like talked at the time, but I understand why she didn't. But like it is one of those things where like you can kind of see them kind of like actually like genuinely meet back in the middle after all this time, which is really interesting. And the fact that like he took what she said really well, too, because he could have been super defensive. And instead, he's just kind of like, no, I get it now. Like, I'm sorry. And he, like, totally owns up to kind of destroying her career.
I will say, since I watched this in syndication, it was weird because I didn't watch it, like, primetime, so I didn't get, like, I would go from, like, random episode from season to season.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I do know for a while, it wasn't until I learned about this that this was weird to me, because I was always, like, obviously I was still, like, a kid and stuff. I was like, are those two different people? Because, you know, cause, like, especially sometimes syndication, what they'll do, too, is they run off with different timelines. And so you don't get episode one and two. You get maybe this syndication at A is running off of season one right now. Syndication B, which is right after, is running off of season two. And so it definitely got a lot of weird timeline stuff. And obviously, being a kid, I didn't know. It was just like, this just looks... like, I think these are two different people, but I don't know, because the same show. So I will say that was interesting, at least watching the show in syndication. It's been with a few other shows, but I do remember explicitly this one, especially because obviously the big difference, because it wasn't like she was just like a random, I mean, I guess she was not like a side character, but, you know, main character, but she was, you know, an essential character. And so it was interesting to see, like, especially as a kid seeing that.
Yeah, and there's definitely, like, different camps, right? Like, going back and rewatching the show like I am right now, she's a good actress. Like, she's a great on Viv. Like, she's a very strong, educated.
Her dance episode is so good.
It's one of the best. Yeah, it's one of the best. Like, it spawned TikTok challenges and things like that. Like, it's good. She's really, really great. It's just really unfortunate that it went down like that. So from there, we'll kind of talk about some of, like, the bigger kind of hard-hitting episodes slash moments that I think really stand out. And thinking back to when we're talking about that almost getting canceled after season four, I think these are some of the episodes that people will go back and watch or go back and reference, because, like, at the beginning and the end of the day, like, it is a comedy sitcom, and there's a plethora of funny moments throughout the entire seasons. Like, I think of, like, when Jeffrey fake wins the lottery, or when they go down to the pool hall and Uncle Phil hustles the pool shark. Like, there's some, like, really, like, funny and good episodes, but there are some episodes of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, even starting in season one, that really do hit on harder issues than just being a teenager or just general family drama, that are, you know, sadly for some of them still relevant 30 years later. So I just want to run through a couple of them, even starting from the first episode. So season one, episode one, The Fresh Prince Project. This is the first episode where Will arrives and basically embarrasses Uncle Phil at a party. And I guess, like, since you watch this in, like, I mean, me too, right? I watch a lot of this in syndication. Like, you'll kind of see more of the timeline as we kind of go through some of this. But the episode basically ends with Uncle Phil and Will having their talk. And Will basically essentially tells him that he forgot where he came from. Basically saying, like, you know, that Will grew up in the project. He doesn't understand the struggle. But Uncle Phil explains that, you know, he heard Malcolm X talk. Like, all these people that he puts up on his wall, he was there in that struggle. He experiences, like, that same kind of racism, things like that. And they kind of have, like, that difference where Will doesn't understand Uncle Phil, but the episode ends with Will playing Beethoven on the piano, hinting that Uncle Phil may also misjudge Will like Will did to him, kind of hitting on kind of minority success and kind of the ability to, like, code switch and, like, when do you code switch? Do you have to code switch? Do you can just be yourself in a big party and things like that?
That's
episode one.
Yeah, I think that that's also one of the things that I really appreciate from The Fresh Prince, like, now. And I got it then, and my mom kind of talked to me about it, too, like, when we would watch it together and stuff. It's just, like, the idea that, like, in order to succeed, you have to be somebody completely different than you. And, like, how that's kind of, like, pushed into us, like, when we're younger. And I think that, like, I don't know, it's also one of the reasons why I really loved The Fresh Prince. Because, like, those were talks that my mom had with me. Like, my mom would tell me not to say certain words when we were out in public, or, like, she would, like, there were sometimes, like, my mom would ask, and my grandma didn't speak at doctor's appointments because of how the doctors would treat my grandma. Like, there's just, like, those different levels to, like, stuff that I think The Fresh Prince hit on, like, in episode one, but also throughout the rest of the stuff that's, like, really, really strong and still really, really important.
Yeah, so even going from there, same season, episode six, Mistaken Identity, Carlton and Will take Uncle Phil's legal partner's car to a different city to go on a trip, and they are pulled over by a cop, and Carlton basically has to come to grips with what it's like to be black outside of, like, his sheltered upbringing in Bel-Air. Like, they get pulled over, and Will says, you know, make sure your hands are on the wheel, and then he tries to go shake the cop's hand, and the cop tells him to put his hand on his wheel. And basically throughout the whole episode, Carlton just thinks that the justice system's going to work itself out and everything's going to be fine. But he doesn't really realize until the end that, like, they got stopped because they're two black kids in a nice car, not necessarily they just the cop was confused kind of thing. It's kind of going back to the whole cops kind of suck a lot of the time and they're racist and we're experiencing that stuff now. So that's kind of that's like episode six. I didn't realize like that happened so early on also in the series.
Yeah,
where they're automatically hitting that.
Looking at the episode numbers, I had because again, I watched it in syndication. I had no idea they just came in real hard, real. In like, and I don't say real hard, like in a negative way, but just like they just put it all out there from the beginning.
Yeah. Then season one, episode 17, ethnic tip Aunt Viv, who is basically like a college professor, comes to Will and Carlton's school, which is basically a prep school with a bunch of white kids. Like they're like the only two black kids in the entire school. She comes to come teach black history after the both of them complain that there isn't enough of their history being taught in class. Will thinks he basically knows everything about black history, but turns out he doesn't really know anything outside of, like, black history cliff notes. And Aunt Viv basically has to, like, school him on the history, really kind of hitting on kind of understanding your heritage and, like, and things like that. Really understanding the story and not just, like, what you read in your bad history books.
Yeah.
Season 2, Episode 6, Guess Who Comes to Marry? This is the one where Will's mom, Viola, doesn't approve of Janice's husband, basically her sister's soon-to-be husband, who is white. Even the whole family is thrown off. They have that whole interaction where they express they didn't realize that Frank was tall, where they're, like, avoiding saying white. And basically, like, so much so that Vi protests the wedding and doesn't want Will to attend it, kind of hitting on like interracial couples and kind of prejudice in that realm. Season 2, episode 23, Be My Baby Tonight. Will freaks out when Ashley asks him about sex, and basically Will has to confront his own kind of womanizing because he tells Ashley that he doesn't want her to think about those things because he doesn't want her to be one of those girls, even though those are the girls that he basically goes for. So cover that really early on with kind of Will's womanizing and kind of way that he acts there. Season 3, episode 2, Will Gets Committed. This is the episode where the whole family basically goes back to LA where Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv get their start. And they kind of have like flashbacks of when they were younger, when they basically had no money. And we kind of see the progression that Uncle Phil has to kind of come to grips with that he might not be doing enough for the communities that he come from, kind of like that rags to riches kind of thing, where basically he kind of like put off going back to the community over, I guess, what is this, like 25, 30 years, basically, after he gets like that first big partnership. And he even says, like, you know, money's not going to change us, but they haven't been back to their old neighborhood in XYZ years. Season 3, episode 19, Just Say Yo. Carlton takes speed that is in Will's locker. Basically, after Will's like stressed out with school and stuff, this white kid gives him some speed, and Will puts it in his locker. Carlton takes it thinking that it's Advil, and Carlton basically ODs, and Carlton covers for Will, but Will ends up telling the truth in probably one of like the most emotional performances from Smith, like where basically has come to grips that he almost killed his cousin. Kind of talking about like drugs and minority in the minority community and things like that.
So
but also like speed.
Yeah, I was gonna say about speed. Like what do we ever figure out what speed is and what happened to speed?
It's
speed
the methamphetamine, still, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think so.
So
but
I've never really understood because Saved by the Bell also told us that speed was gonna be a big thing
yes.
that we were going to encounter.
Yeah. I grew up thinking
never
speed
heard
was
of
like
it
the
outside
worst thing
of TV. I don't even know like.
I remember people always said speed.
I guess for me, like, when I think of speed, I always, like, I just assuming it was something like Adderall that people would use because like, the
didn't
effects
think it was,
seemed very similar.
I thought speed made you go faster.
I don't have access to speed.
Adderall does for people who don't actually have ADHD.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, the point of the matter,
that's why people take it.
But anyways, the whole point with you of like, I didn't understand about speed. Speed, I thought was going to be a bigger part of my life. Speed, apparently.
I did. If anyone ever offered me speed, I would say no to speed because of this episode.
That's what I said. I always said no to speed, but I was like, is it even speed? Because then
so,
it turned out it never
so
was speed.
I was actually correct. Adderall is a type of speed, but speed just means an amphetamine. And amphetamine is essentially was created to interact with the central nervous system and stimulate it. And it was marketed for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, narcolepsy, yeah. and obesity. So, yeah. Adderall is a speed. There are different speeds.
Basically, don't take drugs that people give you. To say no to drugs, kids. Yeah. So from there, don't do speed. But basically, next season 4, episode 8, Blood is Thicker Than Mud. Carlton's blackness is questioned when Will and Carlton try and join a frat, basically a black fraternity. The topic is covered pretty much early on with the show, like basically Will questioning Carlton's blackness, but that kind of gets weeded out in the Compton episode, like where basically Carlton has to go stay in Compton for like 17 hours. Like that kind of gets washed out. But in this episode, basically he gets called a sellout by like the frat leader for not being black enough, because he like lives in a big house and has that big monologue where basically Carlton says, you know, being black is not what I'm trying to be, it's what I am, kind of hitting on kind of like racial identity and community. And it's really one of the first moments like where, well, even if like for the very beginning, Carlton's always been like very, you know, you're not blacker than I am kind of thing. But that really comes to a head there where he has to do it in front of like a big giant party kind of thing.
And that's also like something that I think you don't get if this is like a black kid comes to live with a white family, really. Cause I think that there's just like classism is something that exists in every community, but it exists in like a very heated and angry way in like minority communities, where like even just like having one piece like separate you, because I've had those conversations with my mom, yeah. Where my mom's like, oh, you leave this and now you're, you know, you've forgotten this, so you can't be this anymore. And like, I don't know, I think that that's one of the strengths of Fresh Prince. One, it showed that like a black family could be affluent, which you didn't really see on TV, and you still don't see on TV. And two, like, I think that that's just a really important concept, because like the questioning of like people's identity just because they don't fit into a mold is something that still happens so much.
Yeah, and it's definitely issues that like Medina and Quincy Jones and, you know, Will Smith and like the writing room wanted to cover going into this. That's why they had it be a black family, not a white family, like Medina's childhood was. So I think it works out pretty well, specifically in that episode. There's other instances of that in the show, but I think that's probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
Season 4, episode 24, Papa's Got a Brand New Excuse. That's that episode where Will realizes that his father is basically a deadbeat and delivers that scene at the end with Uncle Phil, where he doesn't understand why Lou doesn't want him, kind of covering kind of like deadbeat parents and kind of realizing that you can, I would probably classify like the Banks as like his kind of found family, because he didn't really know them. So
yeah.
Kind of like deadbeat parents and kind of the idea of found family is very, very important in that episode.
That episode is actually the first time I had the conversation with my mom about my biological dad, because yeah. I asked her about it. Like I can imagine that episode having a lot of impact for people in really similar situations, because it's hard to like at least like, because I feel like it's a different experience than Will, but it's kind of the same. Like you think one way and you kind of need somebody to tell you that it's not that, right? And I think that like a lot of the times, like when you're somebody who like hasn't, because like, I guess for me, like I was in this space where I didn't want to ask about my biological dad because I didn't want to hurt my dad's feelings. And so I never like thought to ask, but then I like, we got to watch this episode as a family. And then I was like, so since Will had this conversation, let's talk a little bit.
Yeah.
In reality, I was crying. My mom was like, why are you crying? And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to tell her. And like, we got to have that. I mean, I was really young, but like just getting to have that type of conversation, having this open that door is really important. So.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's like a really well acted scene. I didn't want to have you talk about it if you didn't want to talk about it. But I figured that episode probably resonated with you a little bit. So I'm glad it kind of spawned that conversation for you to kind of have that with your mom and things like that. So season 4, episode 10, Home is Where the Heart Attack Is. This is the episode where Uncle Phil has a heart attack and Carlton is like super afraid to go to the hospital. Like he like excessively cleans. And because he's basically scared to lose his dad, and Will has to confront Carlton and basically calls him selfish because Will doesn't have a father to catch a heart attack, basically pressuring him to go see Uncle Phil in the hospital, but he doesn't want to see his dad, who he sees as like Superman, you know, with tubes up his nose. So kind of covering like the fear of losing family and then just overarchingly kind of like unhealthy choices. Even Uncle Phil, like in the episode itself, you know, tells him that he's sorry that he failed him and things like that. So season 4, episode 12, You Got to Be a Football Hero. This is the episode where Will gets drunk at a frat party and tries to drive home drunk. They end up like jumping him in like a graveyard, and basically has a nightmare where he meets a bunch of dead people, and in particular a kid who is hit by a drunk driver, kind of covering that drunk driving episode that basically like, every sitcom has to cover. But this that one in particular was really good.
It's really good. It's also really creepy. And I remember this one leaving an imprint and just being like, oh, I don't like any of this.
Yeah, definitely don't like any of that. So season 5, episode 15, Bullets Over Bel Air. This is the episode where Carlton and Will get held at gunpoint. Will gets shot protecting Carlton. And Carlton basically, like, his belief of the legal system is shattered because, like, nothing is done after they get shot. And he basically buys a gun for protection, kind of hitting on, like we've talked about before, kind of like city justice system, especially when you're in the justice system as a person of color. Really powerful episode there. Season 6, episode 7. Oh, I guess I didn't put this episode title, but season 6, episode 7. This is the episode where Ashley is thinking about having sex for the first time with Urkel. Not like Urkel, but like the character who played Urkel.
That was still very awkward, but yes.
Yeah. And Will and Carlton basically like lose their mind and become overprotective. Hillary end up, who is like, you know, not the one you would expect to have this conversation, but basically Hillary has a conversation with Ashley, basically affirming that it's Ashley's right to choose who and when she has sex with somebody. So kind of hitting on that women's right to choose and really dealing with that kind of overbearing family, controlling like the youngest member of the family because she's seen as the baby. We've basically seen her since she was 11 years old grow into a young woman. And then finally, just the season 6 finale, I done. Overall, like a pretty much sad episode of like reminiscing, but I think the biggest moment is when Uncle Phil reassures Will that he has grown so much since he's come to Bel Air and will basically always be his son. Like specifically says that he is his son, not his nephew. Kind of hitting again, like we talked about before, kind of like that found family, and you know, you can be like a punk kid, but you can definitely still grow into a, you know, adult who graduates from college and all the stuff that, that Will does. I knew that. So some of like the biggest episodes, I think it's like 14 episodes that I think are that hit kind of those more than just like a funny episode, hitting hard moments and messages and things like that. Any thoughts on any of those before we move on?
They're excellent choices. I think most of these I can say I see and definitely remember.
Yeah, so from there, kind of like the last fun fact, that's kind of, not like really fun fact, but like the last like kind of why though, this like basically jumpstarts Will Smith's acting career. Whether you like Will Smith or not, it's kind of irrelevant because basically him being on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air puts him into all these other roles. So in addition to like the obvious pressure that you have from NBC at the time, we basically kind of have to squeeze out those last two seasons. Will Smith was like reportedly ready to be done after season 6. So going in, the whole cast knew that the 6th season would be the last one. So they kind of get to go out on more or less their own terms. So in 1996, Will Smith was quoted as saying, "You become a family. On some weeks, you spend more time with your family, your TV family, than you do with your real family. It's hard to say goodbye to that atmosphere, but we felt like it was time. We've all grown as actors and as people. We had an incredibly talented cast, but the show is just limiting. TV is a good workout facility where you get to work on your timing and other paces, but I think I've had enough time in the gym. Now I'm ready for Coach to put me in the game, motion pictures." So even during the filming of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Smith had already been in Where the Day Takes You in 1992, Made in America in 1993, 6 Degrees of Separation in 1993, Bad Boys in 1995, and Independence Day.
I had no idea that Bad Boys happened while he was still doing Fresh Prince.
How did you not? Okay,
I was four.
Well, I guess my point was four. Not like during it. I'm talking about like we've had 30 years, Kate.
I don't know the timeline. I just think of every role that Will Smith got as after Fresh Prince.
No.
Yeah. I'd imagine getting the Bad Boys role is like the one to be like, oh, wait, I can make a bunch of money.
Yeah, the Bad Boys one, I believe, get out of debt. Was like, I'm out of this.
You're like, wait, I can make a soundtrack for my movie, go platinum, and be in the movie? Sold.
Insert Men in Black and Hitch. And
yeah, because that's literally Men in Black is in 1997. So Wild Wild West, I think, is like 98, I think, maybe. Something like that. So basically right after that, basically makes a bunch of money. So basically he goes on to be, you know, Will Smith, plethora of roles.
Which he's also a genuinely good actor.
So the funny
thing, he's a good actor.
So the funny thing is they had actually the statistic, I think his son decided to come ruin this statistic, I believe. But I think it was a while where they did the money where if you were to put like the prototypical actor you would grab that you knew was going to make money based on a genre and everything, you grab Will Smith because of how much money his films always made.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was pegged to be in The Matrix before
Keanu Reeves. Well, that's what I'm saying. It was just because they had that funny stat until his son came and made whatever the hell that one movie was. That was so awful.
Yeah.
He was good at his son didn't ruin it until the second time because his son is good in Pursuit of Happiness because that is just true. A very depressing movie.
Yeah, he's good when he's a kid, but then he starts growing
up. Okay, my bad. When his son becomes, has memories.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, obviously, like, he's done a few movies in the last few years, but definitely more of, like, a producer at this point. Also has, like, a pretty fire Instagram/TikTok account.
Bad Boys for Life is really freaking good.
Oh, I love Bad Boys for Life. Yeah.
So good.
I'm actually not as sad now, not because, like, because you didn't realize Bad Boys came out in 1995 when we were talking about, like, why are they making a third one now?
Yeah. No, it wasn't that I didn't realize that it came out in 95. It was that I didn't realize that he was still playing Fresh Prince while Bad Boys came out.
Did you think they recorded all the shows in, like, 94 and then somehow magically made all the other seasons?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, they pumped them out pretty quick. You know?
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, so that's all I have for, like, but why those and things like that. I do have some fun facts I couldn't really fit anywhere else. So Alfonso Ribeiro was actually fired after the first pilot episode because NBC didn't like him. But basically the cast kind of rallied behind him to keep him in the show, which I think is hilarious. But if you watch the reunion special, he basically auditions for that role in a tracksuit. Like, so he plays bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. Will Smith's, I guess now wife, Jada Pinkett, Entanglement.
Yeah, we had some entanglements.
basically auditioned for the role of Lisa, Will's girlfriend, towards the end of the show, but didn't get the role due to lack of chemistry because of, like, the height and, like, they just didn't, like, work well.
Oh, that's
funny. Interestingly enough, the two actually met for the first time at that audition and started dating after they met at the audition and then, like, together.
I guess that's why they have entanglements, that lack of chemistry.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they were right. They just didn't have the right chemistry back in the day. The NBC knew. People for a long time thought that Quincy Jones was the cab driver at the beginning of the show, but Jada and Rashida Jones, Quincy Jones's daughter, said it wasn't him. Apparently he doesn't even know how to drive because he was in an accident when he was 14, so he, like, never learned how to drive.
So, obviously, the Rashida Jones, which one person is that?
Rashida Jones, Parks and Rec, The Office.
So it's not the new person that's the head of NBC now, because that's been throwing me off today. I'm sorry.
Wait, what?
I mean, that's actually a good point, because it might be, because...
Oh. No, Rashida Jones
is now the head of NBC, I believe, today.
Yes, but they're not the same person.
I know they're not. That's why I asked, because it's been throwing me off today. That's why I asked, which one are we referring to?
Yes. Yeah. No, it is Rashida Jones. Yeah. It's the Rashida Jones that we're thinking.
Yeah, but I can understand how that's confusing, considering...
Today happened yeah, I mean, where Rashida Jones is now the NBC head of NBC.
Yeah, and this show was on NBC, so I can definitely see, like, because that even threw me off a little bit when you said that, so that makes sense. But no, yeah, Quincy Jones apparently can't drive. So the show endorsed a pair of basketball sneakers called the Air Jordan 5 Bel Airs, and this is mainly because, like, a lot of hip-hop heads and things like that were inspired by Will Smith's swag on the show, so much so that he got his own pair of Air Jordans. The show's soundtrack was only released in the Netherlands, so you can't go buy, like, the soundtrack anywhere unless you were in the Netherlands.
No dust.
And something that they cover in the reunion special, and that you can actually see on the shows now, is that Will Smith was such a new actor that you can catch him mouthing the lines of his co-stars in some of the early episodes. Like, that's, if you go back and watch it, like, you can see it. Like, there's one episode where he's literally mouthing Don Cheadle's lines as he's sitting right next to him, and it comes up, like, even in the show to this day, which is hilarious. But I think it's more because he was super nervous and he just wanted to, like, make sure he knew everyone's lines, so he learned everybody's lines on the show, so much so that he could, like, mouth them. And it, you know, it's a running joke that they have throughout the show and even in the reunion special. So that's all I got. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Final thoughts, Matt?
I really enjoyed the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air growing up. I remember watching it quite often. Obviously, I haven't watched reunion because that required me watching TV, and I just don't do that these days. And I'm not a big fan of reunion shows unless they're the trash ones where people just come back and hate each other, which I didn't expect that one.
He has, in fact, watched Married at First Sight reunion shows.
Yeah, because they come back and be like, I hate you. Kevin, you hold strong. You're still the best person I've ever met in my life.
You've never met him.
It doesn't matter. I met him through that show. through osmosis. I live vicariously through him. I remember growing up, I remember watching the show. Like I said, I never watched the primetime, but I remember watching this all the time after school. It's still weird because I've seen so many. I recognize, I have a lot of the memories you talk about and stuff, but I still probably couldn't tell you how many of the 148 episodes I've actually seen. it's a weird thing of just like, and I mean, I'm sure we've done it with a lot of other shows. I think even Seinfeld of like, I could tell you if there's 190, I've seen like 140 of them or 150 of them, but I couldn't tell you which ones are which.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that goes back to just like syndication and then just playing like the highly rated episodes. So there's even some when I'm going back and rewatching, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this episode, but like very vaguely, right? Not nearly as much as like the ones I mentioned before.
Yeah, so. But I understand why people like it. I'm still not, I mean, we'll be interesting to see what they do. I'm not surprised they're going to try to reboot it. That's all we do these days. But no, I'm glad this show got made, and it was, said it was just great to watch growing up as a kid, and this theme song is still great. And you got the fancy little pastel looking, I guess, colors or whatever, the crazy colors.
Yeah.
Neon.
The 90s.
Neon, half neon, whatever. They weren't even like true neon, though. That's why I was like, I didn't want to say.
Yeah. Kate?
No, I mean, I've kind of given my thoughts throughout the whole episode. I mean, I think it's a powerful series that I think is still really relevant today and really holds up. And I mean, I think that there's one of the sad things about media is right now, I don't feel like there are a lot of widely circulated shows that are close to like doing what Fresh Prince does, and stuff like that. And then maybe because of the lack of sitcoms, but like specifically by like representing people of color in different lights and showing different family structures and different dynamics. And I feel like we just continually go to the same thing over and over again now, and thing I mean just like themes, so it would be really cool to get back to how things were, and even better of different family shows showcasing different things. But I also think it's hard too, because like sitcoms are pretty much gone and the majority of shows are like long scripted dramas now and stuff like that. So I don't know, I think it was really amazing. I don't know how many episodes I've watched, but I know I watched all the ones that Adrian mentioned. I don't know. It was really powerful. And I understand why people still love it. I understand why it launched Will Smith's career. And I have the song going on in my head right now.
Yeah, great. I mean, and for me, like, I think mainly for me, it just really comes from seeing myself and characters like Carlton. Like, I distinctly remember when I was in New Orleans when I was little, and people knowing that I wasn't black because of the way that I spoke. Like, oh, you can't be black. You talk like you're white. And I was like, what? Like Mr. Krabs meme just very, like, shook me to my core. But then you see, like, the same things happening to Carlton and things like that. Even in the later episodes where you find out that Will Smith is actually a pretty smart guy, but he kind of, like, hides it because of, you know, what people are going to think about him. Like, those are just kind of big things that I know, you know, my friends who, you know, look like me, like, went through. So I think for me, it's like very pivotal show for me to kind of see, at least not obviously not like exactly like me, but at least similar situations and similar family, you know, dynamics and things like that. It was also like one of the first shows where I saw like people of color being lawyers and people of color being, you know, professors. So it was something that I was like, oh yeah, like that's something that just is, right? And it wasn't until later that I realized, oh wait, that's not like actually the case. So just really important show and a bunch of aspects. Of course, I think it's super hilarious. And of course, I think the cast has like a amazing chemistry, but I think it's really those hard hitting episodes that really resonate with me. And which is why I wanted to make sure we covered this episode before the year went out, as it celebrates its 30-year anniversary.
Yeah. Anyway, if y'all would like to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. And if you want to follow us, head on over to butwhythoughpc on everything on social media. And you can follow me on Twitter at omimithrandir. Adrian?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at superruiz93, SUPERRUIZ93.
Matt?
I'm going to see if I can still play basketball.